Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. Today we're going to talk about new developments in the case of David Coppedge, a former employee of NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab who was fired for discussing intelligent design. Here to talk about it with me is Joshua Youngkin, Legal Affairs Policy Analyst with the Discovery Institute. Joshua, thanks so much for making the time. Let's start by talking about what it is that David Coppedge was actually doing and what led to his firing. Why don't we start at the beginning? What was he doing at the lab? What was his work?
David Coppedge is a systems administrator, or was, until he was terminated. 14-year veteran. He was team lead. That involved largely overseeing the work of other systems administrators who jointly would make sure that the spacecraft, which they send off to Saturn, is operating and sending back information that's readable by the Earth stations.
Would you say that David Coppedge does he count as a scientist or as a computer administrator? Does he fall under a different category?
Well, it's interesting. David doesn't build himself as a scientist with a big S, if that makes any sense. He considers himself a scientist with a little S, and this came out in his depositions, which are testimonial that happens before court, before the trial. He considers himself a scientist with a little S. He is a computer administrator, a systems administrator. He has a scientific background, but he's not a PhD scientist, a rocket scientist sort. He is a very well-informed amateur. He runs websites on the subject of intelligent design, I believe, and also of origin science. This is his life's passion, so he may actually be just as informed, if not more so, than people who study this for a living.
And generally speaking, people heavily involved in computer administration and computer sciences are not exactly considered outside of scientific thought, so to speak.
Not at all. He's a very rational thinker, a meticulous man. He has all the qualities that you would want in your typical lab scientist. He just doesn't happen to wear a lab coat to work.
And does it even matter? I mean, in terms of what kinds of views can be expressed at work and what an employee is allowed to do, does it matter if he wears the so-called scientific hat or not?
No, not at all. As far as the law is concerned, we are, of course, each individually free to express our points of view with certain limitations, irrespective of what profession we happen to occupy. By the way, I should say David is a very intelligent man, and just because he doesn't have certain degrees doesn't mean that he is any less entitled to express his point of view.
So how did David Coppedge initially get himself into a bit of trouble at the Jet Propulsion Lab? What is it he did that caused them to get angry with him?
David Coppedge is a board member of Illustra Media, who produces intelligent design DVDs like Unlocking the Mystery of Life. He passed these DVDs out to willing recipients, people interested in intelligent design. But one day, there was someone who objected to having received a DVD, the digital librarian at JPL, with whom David had a good relationship up until that point. That woman then complained to David's manager. After that, the ball got rolling.
I haven't met anyone before who was upset by receiving a free DVD. This is kind of an unusual thing. So what was the basis of being upset by getting something? Did she respond by saying no thank you and hand it back? Or was her first response a complaint to the employer?
Unfortunately, the librarian did complain right to the manager, David's manager. She objected to the fact that she discovered a sticky note on the case of the DVD, which had a list of names indicating to her that David was intentionally lending out DVDs. She felt targeted and harassed, which then began an HR investigation and ultimately led to this lawsuit.
What was the nature of the harassment complaint? Because sometimes people will claim a sexual harassment or a religious harassment or some kind of ethnic or sexual orientation harassment. But if you're passing out a DVD of intelligent design, how does that constitute a harassment?
Well, harassment, apparently to her, was in the eye of the beholder. She felt harassed. She didn't have necessarily any legal basis to think that she had been harassed. It was simply her passing on her sentiments to a manager who she felt could take action.
And the manager then stepped forward and told David Coppedge what?
The manager said, David, stop pushing religion. The manager believed he understood intelligent design to be a form of religion, and that David was thus seeking to convert people to his form of religion, creating a hostile work environment. That term was thrown around in a dispute between David Coppedge and his manager. Next thing that happened was there was an HR investigation into whether or not David was creating a hostile work environment, even though David's manager was the one accusing David of creating a harassment situation. So this whole thing was rather topsy-turvy from David's standpoint. He was merely doing what he thought was permissible to do and amongst friends. So he was surprised.
When he was told that he couldn't hand out these DVDs anymore, did he stop?
He did. He is a amiable, humble man who is happy to abide by the wishes of those around him. He's not someone who actually does push his religion. He's very circumspect, very quiet guy. He's not the sort to actually be this gregarious, over-the-top, I don't know where the boundaries are type person. That's not him.
So ultimately, what was his punishment for passing out DVDs that spoke about intelligent design?
He was investigated by HR, who did, in my opinion, a rather cursory, if not legally inadequate, HR investigation, passing along this, what I would call a grassroots animus, this animus from the bottom toward David's point of view, his intelligent design point of view, to management, who rather uncritically accepted HR's opinion and gave him a demotion from his team lead position, stripping it from him, in a disciplinary letter which went into his file. This then later became the basis, we would argue, for his termination.
Now, when you say team lead position, what kind of leadership post did he have before, and what were there any accomplishments of note?
David was very well reviewed by his supervisors. He was with JPL since 1996. They liked him so much that they brought him from contractor status to full-time employee status around 2000. He was made team lead on the basis of seniority and also on performance and achievement in the eyes of his supervisors. He was not negatively reviewed until after he filed the termination lawsuit.
See, and that's the key to me. I mean, here's a man who was trusted as the team lead computer administrator on the Cassini mission to Saturn, which is not the kind of position you give to an employee whose work you're dissatisfied with or who you're not sure if they can handle the job. And yet, once these DVDs go out and he hands out DVDs on intelligent design and they step forward and give him this demotion, suddenly there's a justification for firing him because no longer is he considered that a competent employee. It's a pretty abrupt reversal just from reading these reports.
Absolutely. It is abrupt. And that's the problem, we think, is that once there was sort of a sense amongst management that David was presenting a point of view that was disliked at JPL, rather than allowing David to speak in a way that was rightful and lawful, because just to segue again, JPL has an origins mission, an origins project. They deal in this subject matter. They allow folks there to bash intelligent design. He was merely presenting an opposite point of view, one that was positive about intelligent design. So it wasn't that he was going about talking about a subject matter that was inappropriate for what's going on at JPL, the rocket scientists who discover the origin of life and such. He was doing sort of what's part of the mission there. And he was just presenting an alternate point of view. That, we think, was the trigger.
So David Coppedge ends up losing his job, ultimately, fairly shortly after this controversy regarding the DVDs. And I take it he was never treated the same after this HR investigation that showed that he had passed out these DVDs and they decided that intelligent design or discussion of intelligent design was the equivalent of evangelizing a religion. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's how it was seen, and he wasn't treated the same after it came to light that he had been passing this out and they had received a demotion, which was very public and humiliating and paved the way for later termination.
So tell us about the lawsuit that he initially filed.
He initially filed a notice of complaint with the Department of Fair Employment, California's agency that handles these sorts of complaints first, and then gives David the right, or, you know, complainants the right to sue if they first check everything out and everything looks square. David filed his lawsuit with an attorney by the name of Bill Becker of the William J. Becker Jr. Law Firm in Los Angeles County. He is an attorney with the Alliance Defense Fund, an allied attorney. David and Bill have prosecuted the case against JPL and have taken it all the way to the stage that's called summary judgment, which is the stage right before we go to trial. The case has survived that stage, which is a way of the judge saying that there's evidence that warrants a jury hearing the case and not the judge taking it away from them. So it's the judge's estimation that this case is jury worthy. It's a good thing.
And that's the new news about this case, is it's progressed to this point where it is going to see a jury unless the other side decides to come forward with some kind of a settlement offer at this point.
That is correct. Often these cases do settle after the summary judgment stage because the defendant will then say, well, you know, a jury trial is a risky proposition. The downside is very large. The exposure publicly to what they had done publicly is also a consideration that will motivate settlement. Even what folks might say and call up and talk to them about also motivates their desire to settle. But really what's going to tip the balance here is their awareness of the facts of the case, how strong this case is. They should be afraid that they're going to lose at trial. This is a good case.
What issues are at stake in this trial?
Well, there are legal issues at stake, and there are issues that would affect everybody in California, because this is a case that comes under the Fair Employment and Housing Act. It bars employers from discriminating against employees on the basis of their viewpoint when that viewpoint is taken by the employer as religion. See, the Fair Employment and Housing Act, otherwise called FEHA, doesn't bar employers from just, you know, employers can say, hey, look, we don't talk about this stuff at work. They can do that. That's reasonable. And the legislators of California who drafted and created FEHA recognize that. What they don't allow is they don't allow employers to single somebody out for negative treatment on the basis of the employer's view that what's going on there is religion or religious expression. Or for the same reason, you can't also discriminate against someone on the basis of their gender or their national origin or their race or anything of those what's called protected categories.
So it's because the employer in this case, NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, because they decided that any discussion of intelligent design is discussion of religion, that's what brought them into this new area of trouble when it came to punishing David Coppedge, so to speak, because now they're punishing him by their own admission because of, or at least they're angry with him by their own admission because of what they viewed as his religion, even though he was saying it's not a religion, it's his scientific view.
That's correct. David Coppedge, like the rest of the intelligent design community, insists, and rightfully insists with good arguments, that intelligent design is science and not religion. However, the folks at JPL, in particular, certain managers took David's expression of intelligent design perspective as religion. And so as far as the law is concerned, it cares about the motives of the employer. If the motive of the employer is to target religion, then they come under the scrutiny of the FEHA law.
Does this case have national implications, or does it only fall under California law and have precedent for California?
Strictly speaking, it is only a California case, and it is coming under a California law. So even if it were to go up to the California Supreme Court and we were to get a favorable ruling that said, hey, look, intelligent design is a protected class in a sense, or in certain cases amounts to a protected class, that would only have legal authority in the state of California. However, other states typically follow California. And there's a statement I learned in law school, which was, you know, as goes California, so goes the rest of the nation. We see that in certain other contexts, and I think we may see something like that here, depending on how far the case goes.
With this particular case at stake, how big of a chilling effect does a case like this have on other scientists or other people working in a scientific environment? How big of a chilling effect do you think it has on them discussing the idea of intelligent design?
Well, this should actually encourage folks and not discourage or chill their speech. Folks who hear that intelligent design is a protected viewpoint when viewed as religion should be emboldened to speak about intelligent design, of course, as long as it's not amounting to a disruption at work. That's where the law sort of draws a line. You can't be disruptive, and HR policies can reflect that concession in the law.
Sure. What can people do, if anything, to aid David Coppedge in his quest for freedom of expression? It's a freedom of religion case, although it's kind of odd because it's not his religion, and he was never claiming it.
Right.
But how can they aid his academic freedom, if you will, or academic expression?
Well, folks can express their discontent with the stance of JPL by calling Dr. Charles Ilachi. He's the director of JPL. His phone number is 818-354-5673. Actually, I should say that is the number for the general reception. You can ask to be transferred to his office. If you'd like to write Dr. Charles Ilachi directly, and that last name is E-L-A-C-H-I, his email address is charles.elachi. That's charles.ilachi@jpl.nasa.gov.
I take it that's linked up at the discovery.org website as well.
It will be if it's not already. I imagine that will be updating the contact information, the action item is what we call it, soon. And I would actually just really quickly state that there's an alternate route to go. Caltech is a university in the Pasadena area who manages by contract with NASA the operations at JPL, and they have some say over what goes on there. So I would also urge listeners to contact the president of Caltech by the name of Dr. Jean-Lou Chameau. That's a difficult name for some folks, but I will spell it. It's Jean-Lou, Dr. Jean-Lou Chameau, and he can be reached by phone at 626-395 6301 or by email at chameau@caltech.edu. That's chameau@caltech.edu.
How important is it that people call and make these emails and let these folks know that they don't want to see people punished for expressing intelligent design views?
I would say it's actually very important. At the end of the day, the decision to settle and to give David Coppedge his just due will come down to what the top decision makers at these two institutions think. And if they hear that there's public discontent with their stance, they may decide to change course.
Joshua, thanks so much for making the time.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
That was Joshua Youngkin, Legal Affairs Policy Analyst with the Discovery Institute. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information, please go to discovery.org/CSC.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.